Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation recorded live during the May 2015 Youth Education Conference held in Williamsburg, Virginia.
How's it been so far?
Really good.
Who was here yesterday? You're here for the whole thing, the whole 3 days, huh? And the green shirts helped with the planning? Is that right? That's awesome. Does it take a lot of time? A lot of work? Well, that's awesome. I walked into the ballroom. I couldn't believe. I think there's more youth than adults here, actually. So we need your generation. We're going to talk about that in a minute. We're here to talk a little bit about Benjamin Franklin. Tell me what you know about Benjamin Franklin. Anything you know. Go ahead.
He was in the Constitutional Convention.
Constitutional Convention. Very nice. Go ahead.
He messed up electricity with positive and negative. I'm learning physics. It's not right. It's pretty annoying.
Yeah. Awesome.
But he also did a lot of good
stuff. Did a lot of experimenting. Yep. Awesome. Go ahead. How do you know that random fact? That's hilarious. Yes, he did. And I think one of the reasons that he wanted the turkey to be the national bird was because they mate for life. And he thought that was really cool. Go ahead.
He actually started out very poor.
Yes. He started out from, came from a pretty poor family. Any other thoughts about Benjamin Franklin? Go ahead.
He wrote an almanac.
Yes. Farmer's Almanac. Go ahead.
He was a printer.
He was a printer.
Kind of really hilarious and sarcastic and had a really good sense of humor.
How do you know that?
Because I've seen a lot of stuff that he's written. And
Yeah, that's true. And he loved like little sayings, right? Yeah. Little catchy, funny things. Go ahead.
He started a fire station.
You're right. That's awesome. Anything else we know about Benjamin Franklin? Go ahead.
He invented the Franklin iron stove.
Yes. And this is an interesting little thing. He didn't want it. He didn't think patents were a good idea. You should invent so that society can be better. So he wouldn't patent it. So other people copied it. Go ahead.
He was in the group that first read and helped Thomas Jefferson write the Declaration of Independence.
Yes, he was on that committee to help write the Declaration. You're exactly right. He gave some good advice. I'm going to tell you a few things about Benjamin Franklin that are a little less known. That might interest you. When he was 12 years old, first his father was a candle maker, right? And his father wanted him to be a candle maker like his dad. And Franklin tried that for a little bit and not so much. Couldn't handle working with the wax all day. So his dad said, okay, well, let's go with plan B then. I'll apprentice you to your brother for 9 years. This means that you are kind of this person's, I mean, not slave. You did have some rights, but you couldn't work for anyone else. You couldn't go anywhere else. You couldn't do anything else. That's where you were sticking. And that was quite a long apprenticeship. There were apprenticeships that weren't as long. Now, the bigger problem with this apprenticeship was that his brother and he did not get along. Especially when Benjamin Franklin was young, he was very argumentative. He liked to be right, and he was very smart. So he liked to kind of make people look kind of stupid and prove that he was making a very good point. And even though he was right, sometimes it won him some enemies. So his brother didn't really like that about him, and his brother was not the nicest person, I guess. And so his brother would beat him. So he's stuck in an apprenticeship for 9 years with a big brother who periodically beats him when he gets angry. Now, I don't know how cruel these beatings were, you know, slapped him around, pushed him. I don't know exactly, but not a pleasant situation to be in. And again, he's your age, right? That's you. You're Benjamin Franklin. You're working for your brother. He slaps you around sometimes. You're in a printing press. You do whatever he says to do all day long. And this is sun up to sundown. This isn't like a comfortable 9 to 5 kind of a thing. Now, he did some funny things when he was your age, and these are all things that he did when he was your age, and I want you to know them because it's really interesting. All the cool stuff we know about him when he's older, he was a little bit of, what's a polite way to say it? He was a little bit of a mess when he was a youth. One of the things that he did was he thought church was kind of boring and lame, so he just didn't go to church. He would sometimes try to work on Sundays. That was really not okay. He read something somewhere about the value of being a vegetarian, so he thought that would be cool. Now, that's pretty commonplace to us, but it was really, really super weird in his day. People were not vegetarians. People lived on meats. And so the fact that he became a vegetarian was another reason why people kind of turned their heads when they saw Benjamin Franklin. Here's a kid who doesn't go to church and doesn't eat meat. How weird is he? He obviously argued a lot with people, and they didn't like that about him. Now, a funny thing happened when he was about 15 or 16. He'd been in this apprenticeship. He might not have been quite that old. I can't remember exactly how old he was. And his brother gets in trouble with the law because there isn't quite as much freedom of the press at this time as we would like there to be. You couldn't always say exactly what you thought. And so his brother printed some stuff that was contrary to some of the government leaders, and it ticked them off. And so they put his brother in jail for a month. And then they revoked his license to print and said, dude, you're out of business. That's it. It's over for you. And his brother's in his 20s, right? Like, this is his livelihood. This is what he knows how to do. He doesn't know how he's going to do something else. So when his brother gets out of prison and comes back, he and his partners are brainstorming, what in the world are we going to do? Well, they come up with this ingenious idea. They say, okay, they come to Ben. Okay, Ben, here's the plan. We can't legally print, but you can. So here's the plan. We're going to cancel your indentureship, which is his apprenticeship contract, and then we're going to print the newspaper in your name to make it legal. But then you have to stay my apprentice, so we're going to sign new apprenticeship papers. Well, I don't know about you, but I wouldn't like that plan. Ben didn't like that plan. But he went along with it because he didn't know what else to do. And he's got all these adults around him telling him what to do. So he signs it, and they go along like this for a little while, but his brother is still violent, and Benjamin's still sick of being there, and so he takes off. Now, his brother makes it miserable for him. His brother goes around to all the printers in town and says, don't hire Ben. He's a terrible employee, blah, 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 blah. He's broken his apprenticeship to me. He's a bad guy. So he can't stay in town because the only thing he knows how to do is print. And his brother's made it impossible for him to stay at home. So he goes to another state. And he's in trouble now because at your age, right, you should be where? There's only three places you can really legally be. Do you know where they are?
An apprenticeship.
You can be in an apprenticeship.
At home.
You can be at home.
Jail.
Well, jail. You would be there because you had done, you know, illegal things. It would be a legal place for you to be. You could also be at college, right? So those would be, if your family had a lot of money, they could send you to a college. He wasn't any of those places. So what did everybody think? That he was a runaway. Now, an apprenticeship is a contract, and you're kind of like an indentured servant. And so if you're somewhere you're not supposed to be, everyone assumes you're breaking the law because you're a runaway apprentice. So everyone shuns him. They especially shun him because he doesn't go to church. That's a big problem. And he doesn't have any of his luggage. So his clothes are torn up, he's dirty, he's kind of ragged, he doesn't have much money on him. He's kind of on the streets. He's 15, 16 years old. He's in a brand new town. He doesn't know a soul. You know, I mean, he could have run away from jail. He could be a criminal, you know, for all anybody knew. So he's really struggling to get along. Eventually he finds a job and he cleans himself up, and he's very well spoken because he reads all the time. And the governor meets him. And the governor likes him. And so he has dinner at the governor's house. And the governor says, okay, Ben, I've got a great plan. The plan is that I'm going to set you up in the printing business because you're one of the only people in town who knows how to run a printing business, and we need one in town. We need a newspaper, and I want to back you up. So I'm going to write you some paperwork, and you take it home to your dad, and he'll put up the money, and then I'll help you get started, and I'll help you make connections in town. This is a pretty awesome proposal for a kid who's just run away from an apprenticeship, right? So he goes home, and his dad says, no way. Like, you're way too young. Are you kidding? I'm not going to back you financially. Go home and tell the governor. Go back and tell the governor no. But he can tell that Ben has gotten a job, and so he lets him off, so he goes back. So the governor has another plan. The governor says, okay, here's the plan now. I'm going to set you up because we really need a printing press. And all of the machinery you're going to need is over in England. Now, in the meantime, he makes friends with a guy named Ralph. And he also, on his way back, has his brother come to him. And his brother says, here's a huge wad of cash. I need you to hang on to it for me. Well, Ralph doesn't have any money. And so Ralph likes to borrow money from Ben. And he borrows money, and he borrows money. And then Benjamin realizes that he doesn't have the money to get back to the town. And he doesn't have enough money to cover his own expenses. So there's a few things going wrong for Ben. First, he's made friends with this guy who drinks, who gambles, and who debts. And he's using up this money that his brother has entrusted to him. Now, in the meantime, he gets back and the governor says, okay, it's time to head off to England. I'm going to give you a letter of credit, and you're going to go over there, and they're going to honor my credit, and you're going to put all this equipment on my credit. You just make a list of the things that you need. We're all good to go. So he gets a ticket on a ship, on a boat, and he gets on the boat, and he finally, at the very last minute, gets this, can't get this letter from the governor, so he assumes that the ship's captain has it. Gets on the boat. He sails all the way to England. And as he's getting off the boat, he's like, okay, captain, so where's my letter of credit? And the captain's like, what are you talking about? He's like, you know, the governor, he sent me over here to set up a printing press. He gave you a letter of credit. And the ship's captain starts laughing. He's like, you apparently didn't do your homework, dude, because that guy's broke. He has no credit. Nobody trusts him worth nothing. You're totally on your own. Like, you're getting off a ship in England. You have no money in your pocket, no way to get home. You got nothing. But guess what he does have? He has Ralph, his deadbeat friend. So he and Ralph head off the ship. Now, in the meantime, Ralph has a wife and a baby at home. And Benjamin Franklin has a girlfriend at home. And they're in England, and they're sunk. And they have no money. So they manage to get jobs. And Ralph kind of sucks Benjamin into his lifestyle. So they start using up all their money to drink and hang out and go to parties at night. All of his brother's money is gone. And in the meantime, they happen to just forget these women that they left at home. They never write home. They never write. Ralph never writes home to his wife. Wife doesn't know where he is, doesn't know what he's doing. And then Ralph gets a new girlfriend. He's got a wife and baby at home, but he gets a new girlfriend. And he and Benjamin and Ralph's new girlfriend hang out. Ralph manages to ruin this woman who was running a successful business. They move in together. This is Benjamin's best friend. He has no money to his name. He's lost all his brother's money. And his best friend has a girlfriend and a wife who he now lives with. So this woman is ruined in business. And so Ralph says, okay, sweetheart, we don't have any money. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go be a school teacher in another town. But I'm going to be really famous in the future and super successful, like I know that. And so because I'm going to be super successful in the future, I don't want anyone to ever know that I was a teacher. So I'm going to call myself Mr. Franklin. So his friend heads off to this other town to earn money as Mr. Franklin, the schoolhouse teacher. In the meantime, Ben's left back in London with Ralph's girlfriend, who he then begins to try to pick up. These are really interesting. Benjamin Franklin wrote all this information in his own autobiography. He's very open about the fact. And he also, at this time, produced a pamphlet, which he had printed, that was all about morals that he was very ashamed of later on in his life. So he was kind of in a lot of trouble and made a lot of really poor decisions when he was your age. Finally, the girlfriend writes to Ralph and says, "Ben's making advances on me." Ralph comes running back into town and says, "Hey, you know all that money I owe you? I don't owe you any money anymore because you picked up on my girlfriend." So they part ways, they're no longer friends, and Ben begins to try to get his act together. He loses Ralph's friendship, he starts to make some money, he gets himself back to Philadelphia. Now, we mentioned some of his accomplishments later in life. He's in the Constitutional Convention. He has these inventions to his name. He's messing around with electricity. He publishes an almanac year after year after year. He's started the first fire station. Some of the other things you might not know, he also started the first public library in America. And he helped to start the first hospital in his area. And the public library was not only awesome because it was, you know, it helped his town, but it also helped all the surrounding areas become more accomplished and educated. He made super great connections with people in high places and educated himself, built up his business, became very successful, retired young, and did all these experiments and was an ambassador in all these countries, right? And was the constant, did all these really awesome, cool things. He was kind of, in his day, one of the most famous people in the world. He could go in almost any country and people would know. He was kind of one of the first huge worldwide celebrities. Now, what you might not know, which I think is super fascinating, is that one of the biggest reasons that Benjamin Franklin changed, you know what a huge catalyst was for the change that he had in his life? Can anybody guess?
Good friends.
He got better friends. That was helpful.
Did he come back to church?
He eventually did start coming back to church. He wrote prayers. What's that?
He started eating meat.
That was it. It was the meat eating. It made all the difference. One of the biggest things that he did that made a huge impact on his future life was a book club. Isn't that bizarre? Who here reads books and discusses them in some kind of discussion forum, in a book club or in a class or something along those lines? I think that book discussions, you go all the way back to Plato, right? And it's the Socratic method. This is a Western tradition, something that we do. We read great stuff and we talk about it. And it just seems like something we do, it's just a thing. But actually, reading great books and discussing them properly can absolutely change your life. And it changed Ben Franklin's life. It changed his life because it taught him to be diplomatic, because it taught him to stop trying to always be right, because it became an active pursuit of truth, because he made important relationships that helped him in government and business later on, because of all kinds of important reasons. This is what he said about his book club. "I had formed most of my ingenious acquaintance into a club for mutual improvement, which we called the, I don't know if it's Junto or Junto. The rules I drew up required that every member in his turn should produce one or more queries on any point of morals, politics, or natural philosophy to be discussed by the company, and once in 3 months produce and read an essay of his own writing on any subject he pleased. Our debates were to be under the direction of a president and to be conducted in the sincere spirit of inquiry after truth, without fondness for dispute or desire for victory. The club continued 40 years and was the best school of philosophy and politics that then existed in the province. For our queries, which were read the week preceding their discussion, put us on reading with attention upon the several subjects that we might speak more to the purpose, and here too we acquired better habits of conversation, everything being studied in our rules which might prevent our disgusting each other, from hence the long continuance of the club." So what are some of the things that you are right now reading and learning and discussing in the classes that you're taking or on your own?
American history and literature.
And what kinds of things are you reading in American history and literature?
Autobiography, read some of his Poor Richard's Almanac, or reading
awesome.
The Constitution and the Declaration of Independence.
Awesome. Some really awesome original writings. Go ahead.
Book of Mormon.
Excellent. That is a good book. I like that one. Go ahead.
William Shakespeare.
You're willing to reading Shakespeare. That's awesome. Some of the best stuff. Go ahead.
A program called Path of the Hero, which is all sorts of books from like fantasy and sci-fi, like Orson Scott Card's Ender's Game.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind went blank, but and Narnia series,
yeah,
and all sorts of
yeah.
books like that.
Awesome. Go ahead.
Life of Pi.
Life of Pi. I really want to read that one. I haven't read that one yet. Is it good? Anything else? Go ahead.
I read The Great and the Terrible. It's a good book, and some friends of mine read it too, and we discussed it somewhere.
Oh, that's cool. Go ahead.
Well, for a cop, we did book discussions like. One was for Shakespeare, and one was for the Constitution and Declaration of Independence.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty good books.
Go ahead.
Mansfield Park.
I just finished Persuasion. Go ahead. Yeah, did you have a hand up? No? What's that? Oh, yeah. What makes you say that a book is good? Some of you have raised your hands and said, yeah, we're reading this, or we're reading that, it's really good. What causes you to say it's good?
The moral.
The moral? What do you mean?
A moral story has a purpose for the book.
Okay, so it has a positive impact on you. It has a good moral lesson. Go ahead.
Interesting.
It's interesting. You want it to be interesting? Go ahead.
What you can learn and apply to your own life from the story.
So can you think of an example?
Not being greedy.
What book taught you that? Can you think of one? You can't remember the title? That's a good example. So something that you read caused you to think about that you shouldn't be so greedy.
Yeah, or just one of those examples.
Yeah, awesome. Go ahead. Anyone else? Go ahead.
Something unique.
Unique and unpredictable, so it has a cool twist. Go ahead.
A balance between character and plot.
Awesome. What would you say is the percentage of your reading, how much literature do you read compared to how much nonfiction?
50-50.
50-50? Yeah. 40-60.
More literature? Go ahead. You read a lot of nonfiction? Yeah. Awesome. I want to take you back here. He says something really interesting here. Benjamin Franklin forms this book club, right? And he has some criteria for what books they can choose. He does some really interesting things here. He says, okay, so we're going to form a club for mutual improvement. Did you ever think about your classes that you attend or your book discussions that you're in as a club for mutual improvement? I bet your parents do, and I bet your teachers do. I bet you're here, especially if you've chosen to be here, because you're interested in improving yourself. Anybody interested in improving themselves? And what Benjamin Franklin is saying here is that what we read can improve our lives. It can have a massive impact on who we become. In fact, there's this saying, you know, you probably heard it before, the people that you spend time with and the books that you read will determine who you become in 5 years. So if there's a certain person you want to be in 5 or 10 or 15 years from now, you can begin to become that person by what you read. But you have to choose the right things to read, and you have to read them in the right way. So he says, we want a club for mutual improvement, and so they drew up the rules. They had some rules for their club. The first rule was that they needed to produce something to read on morals, politics, natural philosophy. So they wanted to read great stuff. They wanted to read original stuff. What's the value of reading an original writing versus reading something that somebody else wrote something about? Go ahead.
It's more real. Like, you can apply it more into your life.
Awesome. It's more real. Any other thoughts? Go ahead.
Straight from the truth.
Yes, it's right from that source. I'll give you an example. I went, I was doing this research project in my degree program, and I was researching different like educational methods and things like that. And I went to it was right at the time, it was a few years ago, and there was a lot of hype about Columbus. Has anybody ever heard of how people will talk about how Columbus killed a lot of the natives and he was a really bad guy and he brought disease and he enslaved people? Anybody heard that kind of stuff about Columbus? If you were in public school, you would have, because that's what you would have been taught. That's what's in the media, and that's what's talked about a lot. So a lot of that was going on, so I was aware of this. So I go to this school, and there's this lecture all about Columbus, but he's talking about Columbus in a completely different way than I'd ever heard before. And he's talking about how Columbus is praying and how there's this huge miracle when there was no wind, and then they prayed and fasted, and then the wind came. And then he's talking all about how later on in life, he writes this book. Did you know that Christopher Columbus wrote a book specifically to prove that he was the one in the Bible that was prophesied of that would find the new world? He knew that God, I mean, and our Book of Mormon confirms that, right? Our Book of Mormon says God called him to find the new world, and he believed that. He believed he was called of God, and he got with a Catholic preacher, and they looked all through the Bible, and they found all the prophecies, and he wrote this book to show that he had fulfilled that prophecy. Well, I had never heard any of that before, so I went home, and I read his journal. And then the picture that I had of Columbus was completely different from the picture that the world wanted to paint of who Columbus was. So Benjamin Franklin felt like that was really important. And then he says, they were going to run their discussions in a sincere spirit of inquiry after truth, without fondness for dispute or desire of victory. They were truth seekers. It wasn't about being right. It was about figuring out what the truth was. Do you guys ever do this in your discussions, in your classes? This is one of the most valuable things you can do now, as you read, when you discuss, and throughout the whole rest of your life. Heavenly Father has told us over and over again that there is truth. There's absolute truth out in the world. You're told that it's kind of my truth and your truth. If you listen for it, you'll hear that. That's my truth. That's the thing I think is true. But there's truth that's true for everybody, all the time. And so his book club looked for truth. Now, do you think after coming out of all this trouble he was in, and he determines to start a book club where they're going to improve themselves and they're going to seek for truth in great works, can you imagine what kind of impact? And we know who that helped him to become. That's what you're doing. That's what you should be doing. Year after year, reading books that are worth reading, trying to find the truth in them, and then, as this young man said, trying to live that truth. He had this experience. He said, he said this Quaker came up to him and kindly informed me that I was generally thought proud. Would you think that someone was being very kind to you if they came up to you and said, yeah, everybody thinks you're stuck up and proud and kind of arrogant, vain? Kindly informed me that I was generally thought proud, that my pride showed itself frequently in conversation, that I was not content with being in the right when discussing any point, but was overbearing and insolent, of which he convinced me by mentioning several instances. So this guy comes up to Franklin, he's like, yeah, everybody thinks you're kind of a jerk, and you always have to be right, and you're kind of proud, and here's a bunch of examples of when you did that. And Franklin is humble enough to take it in and go, okay, I got to work on it. He makes it one of his 13 virtues, and I'll hand you out a sheet that we can go over in just a minute. He says, He worked on it. Now, this is the next part of his book club. He says they had these rules of how they had to discuss things. That it wasn't to be with fondness for dispute or desire of victory. Why do you think that's in there? Because he needed it. Because he knew that he was always trying to be right, that he was always disputing and arguing with people, that he always wanted to win the argument. Now, we all kind of err on one side or the other, right? We're in class. Sometimes it's really easy to be the person that never says anything, isn't it? The person that never takes a risk, the person that never goes out on a limb and says anything. You could also be the one that's really smart and knows you're smart and knows you're right and kind of wants to be Franklin and overbear the discussion and make all the comments and prove to everybody that you're really smart. So he decided he was going to work on it. And he says, I made a rule to forbear all direct contradiction to the sentiments of others and all positive assertion of my own. I even forbid myself, agreeably to the laws of our junto or our book club, the use of every word or expression in the language that imported a fixed opinion. So he used the rules in his book club to practice being better at being diplomatic. Now, all your lives, you're going to have to persuade people of things. Who can think of an instance right now where you have to try to persuade someone of something? Can you think of an example? Go ahead.
Missionary work?
Yes, that's an awesome example. You have to be diplomatic and persuasive as a missionary. Don't go in there and say nothing, and don't go in there and say everything and be right. No, I'm sorry, ma'am. That's just not how it works. You're kind of a loser because you're smoking right now, so let's get on top of that. No, we have to be diplomatic as missionaries, right? Someone else had a hand up. Go ahead. If you want a cookie. Yes, that's a good example. Go ahead. Somebody else have a hand?
Oh, well, I was going to say, if you want a book.
If you want a book?
If you want a book.
What do you mean?
Well, we have to deck our parents to buy us books.
Uh-huh. To get things that you want all your life, right? I mean, what are salespeople? We're all salespeople. We're all trying to convince somebody to agree with us. And so we need this power of being diplomatic. You try to convince your parents of things, guess what? When you're a parent, you're going to have to try to persuade your kids of things. Maybe you're going to have to persuade them to want to homeschool because maybe they won't want to. You know, I don't know. He realized how important that was, and he used his book club to practice it. He stopped saying things like certainly, undoubtedly, and instead would say, I conceive, I apprehend, I imagine that a thing is so or so. And he became very persuasive. When he was in the Constitutional Convention, he raised his hand very rarely, but when he did, everybody listened. Why did they listen? If he was still known as the arrogant jerk, would anyone have listened when he raised his hand? No, and some people had good points in that Constitutional Convention and no one listened because they were always, you know, oh, here he goes again, here we got another half an hour tirade, and they just turn off. Book clubs can be this amazing place where you change your life. You learn how to listen. You learn how to find truth. You learn how to be diplomatic. You learn how to be a better person. If somebody wants to pass these around for me, like here on one side, you want to hand this over to somebody over on this side and hand those around for me really quick? Here, hand this over there and they can hand it on that side. Okay. Covey gave this example. Being in a book discussion can also help you learn how to listen to people. Often we don't want to listen. Or we think we're listening, but we're not. Let me give you an example. So this is something that this is a story that Covey told. A father once told me this. I can't understand my kid. He just won't listen to me at all. Does anybody have a little brother, maybe, that doesn't listen? Let me restate what you just said, Covey replied. You don't understand your son because he won't listen to you? That's right, he replied. Let me try again, Covey says. You don't understand your son because he won't listen to you. That's what I said, he impatiently replied. I thought that to understand another person, you needed to listen to him. "Oh," he said. There was a long pause. "Oh," he said again as the light began to dawn. "Oh, yeah, but I do understand him. I know what he's going through. I went through the same thing myself. I guess what I don't understand is why he won't listen to me." This man didn't have the vaguest idea of what was really going on in this boy's head. He looked into his own head and thought he saw the world, including this boy. We all do this, right? That person just won't listen to us. And we have to ask ourselves if we've listened to them. Book clubs are a great place to practice that. They're a great place to find out if you really know how to listen. Because somebody says the same thing over and over again, and you keep not getting it. Because you don't know how to listen. Listening is a tough skill. Listening requires that you care. Think of some examples of times when having a good ability to listen would make a huge difference in your life. What are some examples of when you're going to have to be a good listener?
Like a misunderstanding.
Good. If you're in an argument with someone. Go ahead.
If you're a doctor.
Good. If you're a doctor in your career, often listening is very, very important. You can't even know what's going on with somebody unless you listen.
If you have younger siblings.
Yes. They really like you better if you listen to them first. Go ahead.
If you're a missionary.
Yeah. Absolutely. How about listening to your spouse? That's really important. You have to cooperate in everything, right? You have to buy a house together. You have to decide if you get to buy a boat or a new car. I mean, that person has a huge influence on you. How you're going to raise your kids. You have to know how to listen. So these are all very important skills that are developed in a book club, that are developed in your classrooms, that are developed when you read and discuss something with someone else. I want to give you a few little tips on how to prepare yourself better for the classes that you're in and the discussions that you engage in by giving you, we have our little paper here, and we're going to do a few activities these last few minutes that we have. You can take some notes on there if you want. Let me ask you a question. Let's say you had never heard of basketball. And someone came to you and said, "Let's have a basketball game." Would you know what to do? Would you know what the rules were? What you were supposed to do? This often happens when we try to have a discussion of a book. There's no rules. There's no plan. There's no goal. There's no purpose. We just sit. Sometimes we'll say, "Well, this was my favorite part." And then we don't know what else to say. This happens all the time to adults. Now, if you had been educated 200 years ago, that wouldn't happen to you. Because your education would have been nothing but reading, writing questions, and discussing them. Reading, writing questions, and discussing them. James Madison had a 3-segmented day. He would get up in the morning and study and bring his questions to his mentor, and they would talk. He would do it again in the afternoon and then in the evening if he needed to. Read, ask questions, and talk. Read, ask questions, and discuss. That's all you did. One of the very most important things that you can do if you want to get a better education, if you want to have better discussions in your classroom, if you want the books that you read to change you, is write down the 5 types of questions, okay? I'm going to tell you what these are really quickly, and you can learn more about them if you want to go to our blog and all that kind of stuff. There's videos on them and that kind of stuff. And then we're going to read a little bit of this, and then we're going to try to write some questions on it. On these 5 types of questions. Because one of the best things that you can do if you really want to learn, if you really want to pursue truth, if you really want to become a better person and have great influence, I'm telling you, you cannot begin to understand the incredible impact that this small exercise had on Benjamin Franklin. Every week, he's reading, he's thinking, he's writing questions, and he's discussing them over and over and over again, and he changed the world. And it's true of our founders, and it's true of individuals who have great impact today. They're very good thinkers, and they're persuasive, and they're good listeners, and they're very diplomatic, and those are all skills that can be developed in your classes. So the first type of question that you're going to ask when you're reading something is a knowledge question. What happened? The first thing you want to do is, do I get it? Do I even know what happened here? The second kind of question is why? well, I know what happened now. I know what this is about, but I need to know why this matters to me, why I should care, why this person wrote this, why people read this book. Why do we even like this book? It seems boring and lame to me, all that kind of stuff. The third kind of question you're going to ask is a principle question. What is the truth? What is a principle here? What's something that I can find in here that seems like it applies to everybody? This is being a truth seeker. Actually ask yourselves, ask the other students, well, what did you find in here that was true? If you've read Benjamin Franklin's autobiography, you've read this. Well, what did he do here that's true, that's right, that's universal that I can learn from? Fourth type of question is interdisciplinary. Make a connection. You've read this. What does it have to do with the Constitution? What does it have to do with Ender's Game? Because, you know, those are pretty connected. Find connections between all the things that you're reading. And the last question you want to ask is, how can I live this? How can I apply it? Okay. So this is a selection from his autobiography, his plan for moral perfection. Does anybody know what Benjamin Franklin did here? Does anybody know what this is?
Virtues.
Yes. So let's read the beginning. It was about this time I conceived the bold and arduous project of arriving at moral perfection. Are there any words in that sentence that you don't know very well what they mean? Arduous is kind of a big word. You might not completely know what that word means. This is another skill that you can do to get more out of what you're learning in your classes. Look up words. And if you've got an 1828 dictionary, look up the old definitions of the words. He wrote this 200 years ago. So what did these words mean when he wrote it? So look up the words that you don't know. It was a bold and arduous project of arriving at moral perfection. He was going to become perfect. He knew it was bold. He knew it was hard, but he was excited about it. I wish to live without committing any fault at any time. I would conquer all that either natural inclination, custom, or company might lead me into. Now, knowing a little bit about his background, he's in his 20s now, he's married. We know a little bit about what he was like as a teenager. Based on those three sentences, what are some good questions we can ask? What is happening? What's a knowledge question? How about what's happening? What is he doing? What does he want to have happen?
He's trying to change.
Yeah, he's trying to become a better person. What's a why question we can ask of this? A meaning question.
Why now?
What's that?
Why now?
Good, why is he doing it now? What's another why question? Go ahead.
Why does it matter?
Why does it matter? Why does he want to be perfect? Why does he want to do this? What else? Any other thoughts?
Why does he think it'd be better if he changed?
Good. Awesome. All right. What about a principle-based or truth-based question? What can you think of? What's a question that you could bring to class just based on these first three sentences? That would be about a principle or about truth. Can you think of anything? Go ahead.
Custom or company might not always be the good, right customer company.
Mm-hmm. He had that experience, didn't he? Had a best friend who almost ruined his life. So he recognizes that our relationships matter and our friendships matter. What is that? That has a lot to do with you, doesn't it? Has everything to do with you. That's a truth that you can think about. That's a truth that you can talk about. How did his friend have so much impact on him? What kind of impact am I letting my friends have on me? How could I stand up to them? What are some truths that I can learn? Here's another one. Is it a true principle to seek after moral perfection? Should we try to be better? Is that a principle from our Heavenly Father to try to be better? Why do we have the desire to be better? What are the ways that we can become better? This is his plan. Can we have a different plan? What are some ways that you can connect it to something else you've read? Can you think of anybody else that tried to do this?
I was going to say like the prophets and scriptures.
Good. Awesome. Perfect. tying it back to scripture, tying it back to prophets, tying it back to what do the scriptures say? The scriptures say that we should try to achieve moral perfection. They say that we should try to better ourselves. So he's inspired by God to do this. All kinds of richness that you can find when you have those questions in mind and you're asking them. Now, what's an application question that you can come up with from these sentences? Go ahead. How can I become better? How can I follow? Do I like his plan of moral perfection? Do I want to follow it? It's really cool. If you keep, hang on to this. If we have leftovers, I need them for one other class. But if you don't want it, you can bring it up. If you want to hang on to it, then please do. Gives all of these virtues, and then it goes down and talks about how he made a little book and he carried it around, and this is how he marked it up. And this is how he kept track every single night of everything he did wrong. It's really a very cool thing that he attempted to do. I want to end by reading you this awesome quote that I love by John Quincy Adams. "It is essential, my son, in order that you may go through this life with comfort to yourself and usefulness to your fellow creatures, that you should form and adopt certain rules or principles for the government of your own temper." He's writing to his 10-year-old son. He's living in Russia. He's an ambassador. And he writes home this letter to his son, and he says, "You're old enough, you're 10 years old, you're old enough to try to find principles to govern your life by." Isn't that what Benjamin Franklin's doing? He's running a book club that has a pursuit of truth as a goal, where he's asking good questions and he's becoming a great man. And that's what you're about. "Unless you have such rules and principles, there will be numberless occasions on which you will have no guide for your government but your passions." Do you ever think about that? If you don't have a principle that tells you, this is my decision, this is how I'm going to live my life, your emotions will just decide. "Young people sometimes boast of how many books and how much they've read, when instead of boasting, they ought to be ashamed of having wasted so much time to so little profit. I advise you, my son," and this is John Quincy Adams' words, and this is my advice to you, "in whatsoever you read, to remember that it is for the purpose of making you wiser and more virtuous." So get more out of what you read. Read great stuff. Discuss it well. Use the 5 types of questions we've talked about. And think about Benjamin Franklin and how you can pursue truth and become a great individual like he was. Thanks for coming.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.